Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for attending the 2013 Fundraising Success Virtual Conference and Expo. I'm Margaret Battistelli-Gardner, Editor-in-Chief of Fundraising Success, and I am so pleased to welcome you to our Lunch and Learn session. Listen in as nonprofit board members talk about what inspires them. Every organization out there knows that a strong, engaged board is a major factor in creating and sustaining a successful nonprofit. Today's session is special because it provides us with a glimpse into the hearts and minds of actual board members who will share with us some important insights about engaging your own board. But before we get started, let me review some technical pointers. First, if you have any technical issues, troubleshoot by clicking on the widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the question and answer box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select questions both during and at the end of the session, although mostly at the end, but send them in at any time. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the features on the console, and check out the Tips for Attendees widget if you'd like to learn about the console you're viewing on today. If you're looking to get CFRE credits for attending this session, please pay special attention when we sign off at the end, as I'll be going over how to obtain the tracking document for that at that time. Finally, if you'd like to view this session again later, don't forget that we'll be archiving the entire show today. We'll have the on-demand environment up and running for 3 months beginning on Monday, September 16th, so watch your email for more details. Okay, with that out of the way, please welcome our moderator for today's discussion, Gail Perry. Gail is a 22-year veteran of the fundraising sector as well as author of the book Fired Up Fundraising, Turn Board Passion into Action. Gail, how about if you take from here and introduce our guests?
Terrific. Thank you so much, Margaret. I'm so pleased to join y'all today. And everybody listening in, I work with so many boards as a consultant, and I do board retreats, and I hear so much from board members about their challenges and what inspires them. So it's really fun and exciting to moderate this discussion today. And I have two very special friends of mine, actually, who are very, very experienced board members who are going to chat with us, and I'm going to be throwing them questions as well and making comments. The first, I'd like to introduce Betsy Levitis. Betsy, how are you today? Are you there?
I am great and so glad to be here with everyone.
Great. Betsy is in Raleigh, North Carolina, where I am, and she is the community volunteer board member you dream of having. She's been active on a number of boards, but right now her big passion has been the North Carolina Opera, and she's gotten me giving, she's gotten me attending cast parties, she's gotten me sponsoring this and that, and I'm like part of the opera scene now. And how she manages to get people who are not that connected deeply involved is a special skill that I think we can all learn from, and particularly what inspires her to bring people like me in, and I think her perspective is going to be lots of fun. We also share an enjoyment of throwing great parties. And my other board member guest today, he's not quite on the phone right yet. His name is Chick Dombach, and he's been around the block many years. He is currently helping to organize a congressional hearing on peace in Ethiopia up on Capitol Hill, and he's stepping out just to join us today. But he's been CEO of a number of organizations. He's been a board member of a number of organizations. He's an international peace activist, author of 3 books, and currently is serving on 8 boards, including the Alliance for Peace Building, the International Peace and Security Institute, Peace X Peace, Charity and Security Network, Institute for Horn of Africa Studies, and a bunch of other ones. And he's actually forming a board right now. And so Chick is going to give us a very interesting perspective on recruiting high-powered people to a board and whether it's a good idea, and whether you can get them to work, and what it takes to really inspire and motivate these wonderful people. Chick, did you just come on? Did I hear you?
I just came on. Perfect.
Welcome.
Time.
Thank you.
Thank
so
you.
Much.
You bet.
Good. And just so you know, my Twitter handle is at GailPerryNC, and I'd love to, if y'all want to tweet, we can all tweet together in the background, but I won't look until after I'm done. Now, I want to set the context for our conversation today with a few thoughts of my own, And Margaret asked me to prepare a few PowerPoint slides to illustrate some of my points that I wanted to make. So let me just walk you through about 10 minutes of my own perspective as a coach and consultant to boards and an author about boards. Here is the problem. Can we take our boards from bored to blazing? And actually, when I do a board retreat, I show board members these pictures. And the blazing picture, I'm on a board called Lillian's List in North Carolina. And these are our officers, the chair of our board. And we took everybody's picture with the I'm ready and posted on our website. So this was a go-go, happy experience to get board members excited. But I want to address the whole issue of nonprofit boards. And I may even, I'm sort of not wild about the way things function with nonprofit boards. And one of my problems is Robert's Rules of Order, but I'll get there in a minute. Here is the issue that I see with board members. It's called self-consciousness, and it's called frozen in time. And I show this in board retreats, and one lady raised her hand once, and she said, I know the person on the left, you know, who doesn't even have a face here on the screen. And when I show this picture to board members, they all laugh nervously because they see themselves here in this picture. And they're not enjoying themselves either because, you know, here's another board that's blazing. This is after a board retreat. This is the Southern Appalachians Highlands Conservancy in Western North Carolina. They're all happy and they're fired up. So our theme today is how do we go from bored to blazing? How do we go from frozen in time, self-conscious, bored and boring, to something really excited and action? And you know, let me just say that you can't change the world with this kind of frozen energy. The kind of energy that changes the world is high energy. It's exciting. It's not rooted in bureaucracy. It's not rooted in ego. It's not rooted in the status quo. Yet we find ourselves bestowed upon with the format, traditional format and history and functioning of the boards that we have. So just a couple of points about boards. I'm a real fan of Peter Drucker, you know, the great management consultant. And he said, and I love this, that culture eats strategy for breakfast. And so what does that mean? That means that the culture and habits of your board will eat alive any planning, any strategy, any maybe a list of board member expectations that you've signed. The culture triumphs. And we spend all this time getting set up in the outcomes and the strategies and the plans and the action plans and the commitments, but we're not dealing with the underbelly, I like to call it, of the psychological aspect of motivating board members. And if you're going to motivate board members to get on board and get excited, you've got to deal with the psychological issues. And motivation is all an emotional thing. If you look at my next slide, I have a problem with boring meetings because Robert's Rules of Order is perhaps perfectly designed to eliminate all passion and energy out of a group of people. And, you know, yes, we are obliged to, through our bylaws, of conducting business via Robert's Rules, but that doesn't have to be the 100% experience of our board members. And one of the reasons board meetings are so important is that they are the principal point of contact between the board member and the organization. So if you're having boring meetings, which most everybody is, then you're not ever going to have a excited, passionate, fired up board. And, you know, one of the things that good old Aesop said way back is that after all is said and done, more is said than done, perhaps. After all, you know, this is what happens. And so I want to just share a couple of my own thoughts. Because people listening, I hope some board members are listening, I know a lot of nonprofit leaders and staff are listening, is that I think it really all starts with you. Because you have to be willing, you know, there's this old saying, if it's to be, it's up to me. You have to be able to reflect a can-do, go-go energy out to your board. And you know something? They will pick up on it. If they're not enjoying themselves, they will be grateful for you asking the questions and trying to create a shift. And also, you know, my number one fundraising motto is when in doubt, throw a party. And I know Chick and Betsy agree with me on that. And I would also say that you have to, and Betsy has some very interesting comments about this, but you have to make it fun. And you have to lighten up. And I think everybody treats our boards with these kid gloves and is oh so serious. But I think they are interested in more than just work. And I can't wait to hear what Betsy and Chick have to say about that. And so, you know, one of my favorite tools to inspire board members is to help them understand how to I like to stage a conversation among all the boards. I never start a board retreat without this question. Why do you care about our organization? And if you think about this question, why do you care about this organization, people really like to talk about it. And they don't really have a chance to talk about it. And it's a passion fuel question. It's like, why am I standing here? This is what it means to me. If you have board members talking about that stuff, you can really, really create a very different experience for them. And so what I like to do, I like to give my board members practice talking about why they care so that I can turn them into sneezers. You know, the board members love this when they get trained to be sneezers because they're spreading the idea virus of their organization all around the world. Love it. Just a couple of other thoughts because I'm dying to hear what my friends have to say about these issues that I'm putting on the table. My other favorite strategy, and this is something you're going to find very intriguing, my favorite strategy for motivating board members, especially in fundraising, is to have detailed conversations about where the money goes and why does it cost so much. And it can't be in a presentation. It's got to be in a two-way back-and-forth conversation. And whenever I'm doing a board retreat, I like to stage a panel discussion, and I'll interview and moderate them to just drill down. You know, why do we need so much staff? We need to do that. Oh, we need to do that. Oh, does it cost that much? Oh, wow. Because then the board members can go back out into the community and say, do you know that for $100 we can give 50 kids backpacks to take home food for the weekend from school? Gosh, isn't that amazing? And so they can talk about something besides the money. I'd be really interested to hear what Chick and Betsy have to say about this, but I do think another of my favorite strategies is to bring board members deeply into the work of the organization and give them what we call mission moments. And one of the things I like to say is try canceling your next board meeting and take everybody on a field trip. How about that? Cancel your next board meeting and take everybody on a field trip. So a couple of other quick ideas, you know, what do board members want? I truly think they want to meet the other board members. I think they want to have social time because social time builds trust and collegiality, you know, and if you try to bring up fundraising, they're going to get like deer in headlights. Did somebody bring, you know, if you want to bring up fundraising to your board members, you've got to calm them down, make it fun, and give them easy jobs. That's a tweet that I put out every now and then. Calm them down, make it fun, give them easy jobs. And whenever I do tweet that, everybody retweets it because it makes so much sense. Because they think that fundraising is begging and they don't understand fundraising. So we have to make it easy for them. But enough of me. I want to hear from my colleagues here. I really want to hear some. By the way, my blog has a lot of these ideas written up in articles that you can use. So it's a great resource for a lot of in-depth information on motivating board members. But let's talk to Chick and Betsy. And let me hear from them. My first question is, this could be the meat of our entire day or session today. What does it take to get board members motivated and excited? I've just shared you my ideas, and maybe I think I'll start with Chick, if that's all right. What do you think it takes, Chick?
Well, I think It begins with getting the right people on the board and with them knowing why you want them on the board and you knowing why they want to be on the board, because you can't motivate somebody to do something they're not interested in and don't want to do. And it's a big mistake to get high-powered, well-known people on the board just because you want them on the board because they're well-known and high-powered. That you've got to match that with them actually having an interest in being motivated by the mission of the organization. But the beyond, once you've done that and gotten those people on your board, engaging them in a meaningful way in what the organization is all about. Everything that Gail has said is right on target. But I think particularly during board meetings, providing an opportunity for meaningful dialogue, meaningful discussion about the real substance of the organization, and an opportunity for them to feel that they are actually making a difference, makes all the difference in the world in terms of their attitude about the organization and what they're able to contribute. One of the most important things to keep in mind is you get these high-powered people on, you've got brain power and community power on the board. Are you taking advantage of it? Are you using it? Dick Chait has often said that it's nonprofit board meetings often are a big waste of time and a waste of talent. You've got this talent on the board.
Yeah, didn't he say that nonprofit board meetings could be the biggest waste of human brain power on the planet?
That's what he said, and I think he's right. And you look around at the board, the people that are sitting there, and see who they are. And say, are we taking advantage of who these people are and the brain power that they have and the leadership chip skills that they have, or are we just having them sit here for window dressing? Give them a meaningful role.
Let me just say, I want to hear from Betsy in a minute, but I serve on a board, and the area that we're trying to work in, the world is coming to an end, practically, in the area that we're trying to work in, and I'm seeing that the board that I'm on focusing on governance and process issues like conflict of interest statements, which are great, they're important, but why are we devoting so much time to this process stuff about how we're working together when the world is falling apart? And I don't get that. Betsy, have you ever run into that?
All the time. this is why I'm a big believer in the small group approach, but you really have to have somebody who's a go-getter who is leading the smaller group, because that's where most of the actual work gets done anyway, and then any decisions that get made, hopefully, those will get made with less discussion than you would have if you had the entire group trying to make a decision. I've been lately working on a particular activity, which is a gala, and we beat the odds on that, Gail.
Correct.
I didn't want to be heading a gala because I didn't believe in galas, because I thought they cost too much money. But we made, 30 cents. It only cost us 30 cents on the dollar last time, which I thought was pretty good. But it gave everybody a reason to bring other people into the board and also activities that they could engage in easily. So kind of to get back around to getting things done with smaller groups, the gala committee is one such way to do that, is to have a particular activity or a particular small group focusing on something. I guess that's all I wanted to say about that, unless you'd like to hear something more.
Well, Chick, you and I have talked in the past about how committees can be deadly, but task forces can be terrific. Do you have a comment about that?
Certainly. I can't tell you the number of organizations I've been involved in over the years that have a proliferation of committees, end up with 6, 8, 10, 12 committees. And whenever I work with them, I say, how many of these committees are active and actually doing something? And the answer is usually somewhere between 0 and 3 that are actually functioning. and the others are just sitting there, and it's discouraging to serve on a committee and the committee doesn't do anything. But managing committees takes a lot of time and effort. Unless you've got a substantial staff to manage the committees and make sure they're functioning, they're probably not going to function. Or the board chair needs to spend a lot of time making sure those committees function. So a far better approach to it than having all of these standing committees. And obviously, there are a few standing committees that you need to have. You need a governance or nominating committee, of course. You need a finance committee. But beyond that, where we create committees because, you know, something comes up, says, let's create a committee for that. Instead of creating a committee that's a standing committee that's there forever, make it a task force with a very specific task to accomplish and a time frame within which to accomplish it. And the people who are interested in seeing that task fulfilled, make it a task force. They get the work done. The task is completed. They get a strong pat on the back, appreciation for having done it. And then they're relieved of that responsibility and ready to move on and take on something else. So the whole concept of creating task forces instead of standing committees has worked out extremely well.
Mm-hmm. I think we should banish almost all committees. Let me ask you this. I am board governance chair of my favorite organization, and I was suggesting to the executive committee in terms of dealing with the agenda and committee reports that we maybe when a committee has a report, perhaps we might want to say it's the rule of three. The committee tells everybody three things that they've accomplished or three burning issues they're working on. They talk about three challenges that they have, and then the last one doesn't have three. It says, what do they need from the rest of the board members to do their work? And I think that if we could give maybe committee reports some sort of format, they can become far more interesting. What do you think?
I love that idea.
I do, too.
All right, well, look, let me go back. Chickie made a comment.
Action-oriented, where it's not just a pro forma, boring, unmeaningful report. I come back to that point about making things meaningful for committees and for boards. That just makes all the difference in the world. If you just
I want to explore the concept of what meaningful discussion is because, you know, we struggle with it. You know, we have our agendas. We have these important people around the room. And, you know, I remember when you were executive director of the Alliance for Peacebuilding, you told me, I believe you did, that for every board meeting, quarterly board meeting, people coming in from around the country, you choose a discussion question they're going to enjoy working on, and you set up each board meeting may have a theme, and it may have a setup for a discussion that they will enjoy. Is that correct?
That is correct, and it made a huge, huge difference both in the energy of the board members themselves. You know, they look forward to coming to the meetings and engaging in these things, and for the organization. What we were able to develop and generate out of these sessions was tremendously valuable. For example, With regard to the whole concept of the organization Alliance for Peacebuilding, that term peacebuilding is relatively new, not very well understood. And so part of what we wanted to do was help define that term and get broader understanding of and appreciation for and support for that term. So at one of the board meetings, the topic for the board to discuss was that. How do we take this term, this concept that we're all about, and better define it and better engage the larger community, that is the diplomatic community, the State Department, the military, governments, and the non-government organizations worldwide to grasp it, understand it, and apply it to what they do. Just how do we do that? Board, what do you think? How do we do that? And, boy, was that a fascinating meeting. And it engaged the brilliant minds of these amazing people that we had on the board, and they helped us think it through and come up with a way to move forward.
Yeah, wow. And such a wonderful case in point. And, Betsy, what does it take for the Opera Board to really get excited and generate meaningful discussion?
I think really bringing it back to, you know, who are we and what are we doing? One of the things that we have done this same along the lines of the field trip is if you can demonstrate what the work of the organization is to people and get them asking themselves, how do I fit in and what can I bring to this endeavor and how can I get the word out best through my networks and my special skills to everyone and how can I get other people involved. So it's like you want to be the club that you want to belong to, you know, to be able to get other people excited. You need to be excited about it. And that also has to kind of be whether or not you have a brilliant person like Chick who's running the show. I mean, you could have in any organization leadership that actually stifles participation, but you can get lot done down the line if you are involved in the activity that helps you, you know, fire up your own passion and spread that passion around.
Once, Betsy, I consulted with an organization and there was a retired general who was the board chair, and so the board meetings were 1 hour, not anymore, and discussion was at a minimum. It was like boom, 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 and everybody was whispering to me going, it's so boring. And I'm thinking, here they are creating the most amazing botanical garden that anybody's ever seen. They're going to revolutionize their city, and they're telling me that their meetings are boring. Chick, have you ever run into a situation when the board chair is stifling participation? How'd you get around it? I think this is a really thoughtful and interesting question, Betsy. Thank you for mentioning it.
Yeah, you see it all the time, and you have people who think that these – totally structured board meetings that start exactly on time and end exactly on time and a detailed agenda and you go through point blank and get everything done and at the end of it you say, yes, we covered everything and we voted on everything and everything passed and so it was a great meeting. And the board members walk out saying, why was I here? What difference did it make that I was here? And I think that, yes, you don't want to have meetings run way over because then people, you know, start to lose interest and are afraid to come to the next meeting for fear they'll be asked to stay too long. But it's somewhere in between those two extremes. But I think the important thing is to allow time and opportunity for real engagement, real dialogue, real careful consideration of the issues that are before the board meeting.
Betsy.
Oh, I was going to say that a lot of times you can get the best work and education done outside of that meeting. And I was going to give you an example of, being on the Gale committee. This could be anything. We needed to tell especially the new board members about what this meant, you know, where this fit in our entire development strategy, what the different components are, how board members can plug in. And so we had an event at one of our powerful board members' homes, and we had really good wine, essential, and hors d'oeuvres, and we had the staff and board members presenting the information that everyone needed to know and, you know, get the papers out there, and everybody had a fabulous time. And so we got all this important work done that would never in a million years gotten to be discussed or even presented in a regular board meeting. And everybody thought it was great, and they got all fired up about it. So,
wow, that's amazing. And, you know, the thing is, yeah, that you got them outside. I think I do an awful lot of public speaking and presenting, and I have discovered over time that the setup of the room has an enormous amount to do with the experience of the meeting or the event and the outcome of the event. And if you – I also read something recently from the neuromarketing blog, which I highly recommend, that said that people, when they're seated in comfortable chairs, they are more generous and more open to new ideas. And so from now on, whenever I do a workshop or anything, I try to have it in somebody's living room or in a more – in a lounge-like setting rather than a strict auditorium. Have y'all ever run into those situations, Chick?
Actually, you beat me to it. I was going to bring up that exact point, that the setting and the room arrangements make all the difference in the world. You know, it depends on the organization, the nature of the meeting, and so on. There may be some, you know, and it depends on the size of the board. Yeah, you may or may not be able to meet in somebody's living room, for example. Intentional arrangements for the meeting make all the difference. When you know what you want to accomplish, what kind of environment you want to have, and make sure that the meeting space is then conducive to what you are trying to accomplish. But generally speaking, the more pleasant, let's put it that way, the more pleasant the environment, the more people are apt to relax and become engaged and enthusiastic. And quite frankly, the more they're going to look forward to coming to the next board meeting. You know, if it's a pleasant environment and they enjoy the experience of serving on the board, they're going to look forward to that next meeting, and they're going to better represent the organization out in the community. They're going to be more enthusiastic about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you used a key word called relaxed, and I've never heard that word ever associated with board meetings or the board experience. And let me – I want to make a couple of comments about the psychology of all this, is that I, after many years of serving on boards, chairing boards, consulting with boards, coaching boards, and this is a little bit maybe cynical, but I think it's honest. I think that the number one motivation of people when they come into the room is that their self-preservation of their own ego, and that they want to be they don't want to be embarrassed, and they want to be thought well of by their peers. And if you look at it from the psychological perspective of group process, they want to belong to the group. And to me, that is I talked about the underbelly. That is one of the great motivators of people coming in, and so making them relaxed and comfortable is key. What do y'all thought? Am I out of line on this comment, or what do y'all think?
I think it's essential, and also I'm going to go back to this example of this kind of, I'm going to call it a subcommittee meeting, because it was not the whole board, and we fit into this beautiful, comfortable setting, and people were getting to know each other. And I talked a little bit, well, first of all, we went around the room and we did introductions and said, you know, what brought you here? Why are you on the board? Getting back to your, what is your basic inspiration? That gets shared around, and you get to know other people and learn from them. But also during the part where we were socializing, I was asking questions about what people did and what their passions were and how they might fit into the gala promotion and support. And I got great ideas from them that during the kind of formal part of the meeting, I could say, and Joe over here had this wonderful idea, and Mary over here has this great skill, and, you know, and so where they didn't have to say it themselves, other people were made to learn more about them in this different context, and then it would make them more able to speak up when the discussion started.
Yeah, I think if we can recognize the fact that people are inherently self-conscious in this rather formal arrangement with people they don't know, and if we honor that and make them comfortable, we'll all be more productive. Chick, I'm sure you've tried to settle wars between nations, right, as a Peace Corps. What's been your experience?
Well, a lot of experience with virtually every kind of organization and every kind of situation imaginable. But I think the point about what board members are volunteering their time, and they're even getting out their own checkbook to support the organization. So it needs to be an experience that meets their needs. What do they want to get out of it? And quite frankly, a big part of what they want to get out of it is ego gratification, recognition, respect, and anything that can be done with the board to make sure that those individual board members are acknowledged and respected and appreciated. And that needs to permeate everything that you do with them, you know, communication with them, keeping them informed, as well as making the board experience a positive, meaningful experience. Committee assignments where, again, we don't have so many committees that it becomes burdensome. I've seen boards of eight people where they had 12 committees. Good luck.
You know, oh, no.
Ain't going to happen. So having respect for their time, and so that when you are asking for their time, it's a meaningful use of their time. So I think all of those things come together to result in a comprehensive, positive experience. Just to always have that in mind, that it needs to be a positive experience for the board members.
Positive experience. Mm-hmm. When I was writing my book, I was interviewing a lot of people about their board member experiences and serving on boards, and I rarely heard anybody refer to board meetings as particularly positive experience. Now and then I would, but a lot of times the staff will say, why won't my board work? Why can't I get my board to raise money? Why won't they go on or 10 events? And, you know, I do think that's why I started my set of thoughts today was with you got to start with yourself and make it fun and lighten up, and then all of a sudden everything will shift.
I am chairing a board right now that happens to have some very high-powered people. Harriet Fulbright to the Fulbright Scholarship thing. Scholarships are named after her late husband. We have a Saudi princess. Several other major figures. We have within this organization a committee of fun.
A committee of fun?
Fun. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Everyone
it's
needs
not
to
even
be
called a
that.
Social committee. I like it's, a social committee should be part of the board.
This is a standing committee, tongue in cheek, standing committee. It's all tongue in cheek. But every time we have a meeting, we call for a report from the chair of the fund committee. And it's just a way of saying, you know, guess what we're doing is really important. In fact, this organization is all about trying to bring peace to the Middle East.
Wow.
Minor undertaking. And very, very serious stuff.
Uh-huh.
All the more important to have a committee of fun. Say,
mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, we're trying to help bring peace to the Middle East. Let's not take ourselves so damn seriously, and let's recognize that part of what we want to do is have interaction among ourselves and enjoy that interaction among ourselves, and every now and then let's have a little fun. Otherwise,
yeah.
This will become drudgery, and we will lose our enthusiasm for it and our commitment to it. So we literally have a committee of fun.
This is Margaret. I'm sorry. I wanted to, if you don't mind, I wanted to interject with a couple of very specific questions. I'm looking at the questions as they're coming in from the attendees, and we seem to have some themes. So I'd like to put this out there, and you can direct them however you see fit. But there are three things that I'm seeing people asking about. The first is, what do you do if you have the wrong people on your board? The second is, what do you do, how do you transition a board that was established without a fundraising requirement to where there is an expectation to give? And also, I'm sure this is the biggie, how do you get board members to get over their fear of actually fundraising? So those are the three themes that I'm seeing, and I'm going to just turn it right back over to you.
Well, you know, we can have fun with those, can't we, my friends?
Absolutely.
The first one is, what do you do if you have the wrong board? Let's start there. What do y'all think?
Well, among other things, it's part of the reason you have term limits for board members, or at least you have terms so that when the term is up, if somebody is not a productive or valuable board member, they cycle off the board, and even if they're eligible to be reelected to the board, you just don't do it. I've just gone through that with a person who was terribly, terribly disruptive. but determined to stay on the board. And we simply had to have the discipline to say to her, sorry, you can't stay on the board. It's you are a negative force, not a positive force. That was done
wow.
as respectfully as it could be done, but she demanded to know why. And so we finally came to the point of just flat out telling her, just be honest, saying, sorry, you're a disruptive force. But we did wait until her term was up. Now, if somebody is a major problem, then you may have to deal with it, and there needs to be a provision in the bylaws for getting them for removing people from the board. But generally speaking, you want to wait until the term is up. But make sure you don't do the we in the nonprofit world tend to be so damn nice that we don't want to hurt anybody's feeling.
Oh, yeah.
And yet we are running important enterprises. What we're doing is important work. And there comes a time when you just have to stop being nice and do what is in the interest of the mission of the organization. And if a board member is problematic in terms of helping fulfill the mission of the organization, you got to do the right thing. Again, it's best if the term runs out, but you've just got to do it.
Yeah, and I would say that if a board member is driving a staff member crazy, every staff member needs to have a board member in their back pocket that they really trust, especially executive directors mostly. So executive directors, if you're listening in, you need to have your colleagues that you really trust and you can say anything to the board members. And so if your staff and it's not your decision about getting rid of a disruptive board member, I think it's up to you to be, you got to take charge yourself. It's up to you. That you've got to get your board members willing and support them to take that kind of action. Betsy, have you run into this?
Well, yes, but they weren't terribly, terribly disruptive, and the law of eventuation sort of takes over.
What's the law of eventuation?
They will eventually ride off into the sunset, as Chick said. And also, but while they're still there, trying to find the perfect activity for them where they can be successful and they can contribute, but they are not in the mix of they're not mucking up the works is the ideal way to, if you can possibly do that, that would be ideal.
Yeah, and I think board chairs need to have a boot camp for board chairs somewhere so that they can learn group facilitation techniques, and there is a way to cut people off politely. And so I think supporting I hear a lot about board chairs who are very weak in their facilitation skills, and that also contributes to having the wrong board. But term limits is the real way, sometimes if I go into an organization and they have term limits but they're not enforcing them, I say, oh, my gosh, you mean you're not enforcing term limits? This is you're outside of your bylaws. I try to make it a big deal because I know it has to be done. And I may also say, and this is important, that I was working with a very big hospital in the Northeast, and a huge hedge fund guy who was on the board said out loud, and he said, if we're ever going to get serious about raising money, we've got to have term limits. And that one I never forgot. Let's go to the second question, and that is, what do you do if your board was established without a fundraising responsibility, and you move it into and you have to add the fundraising responsibility? What has been y'all's experience?
Been there, done that several times. And you just have to do it. And for the most part, boards know and understand that is needed. I'll tell you what tends to happen is the board has been meeting and they recognize the organization is in financial trouble. And so you simply say, well, did you ever consider the fact that in the nonprofit world, the board needs to take major leadership in giving and raising money, and this board is simply not doing that. So if you want to know why we're in financial trouble, look in the mirror. That's why we're in financial trouble.
Ooh, and who says that? The consultant, the executive director who gets promptly fired, or what?
preferably the board chair. So that's a discussion between the chief executive and the board chair to talk this thing through and say, you know, that this is the reality. So if it can come from the board chair, so it is one of the board members, that makes a huge, huge difference. If not, it may be that you want the outside consultant to do it. The chief executive may be able to do it, but that depends on the dynamics of the relationship between that CEO and the board. If they have a really good collegial relationship and you can do it, that's fine. But figure out who the best one is to do it. But you do it, and you give the opportunity for the board members who came on without that understanding an opportunity, certainly to serve out their terms without having to do anything, but for them to understand that in order for the organization to achieve the mission that they happen to believe in, that this becomes imperative. Now, the other thing you can do is make the minimum giving level pretty modest, so that those people who aren't able to make a major contribution can do it. I'm talking about $25, $50, $100. And virtually anybody who serves on a nonprofit board can at least do that. But then you go through a transition. It may take 2, 3, even 5 years to go through a full transition to where you have a board that knows and understands that their fiduciary responsibility is paramount. But you have to have the courage to get it started and move it in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just realized we only have a couple more minutes, and I do, Betsy, I want to hear from you, but I also want to make, my strategy with board members who don't want to do fundraising is related to the fear of fundraising, and I sort of sneak it up on them. And what I do is I might divide the board into thirds, and I might get a third of the board making thank you phone calls to donors. Because we know statistically when board members make thank you calls to donors, then the donors will give more money. And maybe another group of people can decide that they're going to host tours of your facility or something. So if you can find roles in fundraising that are not necessarily called fundraising, maybe they're called philanthropy or awareness. You remember the slide of the deer in headlights? You know, board members think fundraising is the F word. But you can set up activities for them to do that they may even be willing to do joyfully and enjoy. But just maybe don't call it fundraising. But you know that this is absolutely essential to your ability to raise money. What do you think, Betsy?
All of that is absolutely right on. And the first thing I would do is call Gail Perry to come and talk to the board. And also there's the problem of if you have any sort of somebody with development on staff on their name, they tend to use that person as a crutch. And so the development person really needs to be involved in gearing up a reluctant board in coming up with those kinds of activities and a new way of thinking about their role on the board.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe sometimes we talk about having a culture of philanthropy. Maybe we need to have a donor-centered culture or a culture donors, you know, and maybe the organization can decide that we're going to embrace all of our donors and love them, and that's going to be part of the board's job. And if we did that, we could triple maybe our fundraising if we were all about our donors. So there are different ways to frame it. You reframe it, and you can get what you need, I think.
Right.
Well, great. Thank you. I am going to have to step in here so that we can wrap up the session. We obviously can talk about this for quite a while, but we want to make sure that our attendees can get to our other sessions. And also, we'll be addressing this. And Gail, this is a warning for you because I'll be contacting you. We'll be addressing this in future issues of the magazine, and hopefully there are some questions that weren't answered. So I hope that we will get them answered for you guys. Keep an eye on the Today in Fundraising newsletter for those answers. And now, on behalf of Fundraising Success Magazine, I want to thank everyone for attending the session and for participating. We had some great guests who we appreciate very much. In order to download the tracking documentation that you'll need to claim the CFRE points you're entitled to for participation in the session, please just click on the resource widget below. It's marked with a file folder. If you're interested in discussing anything that you heard during the presentation, we encourage you to visit the networking lounge to chat live with other session attendees. And please also visit the info booth and fill out our show survey to let us know about your experience today. Remember, if you miss anything today, the entire virtual show will be archived and the on-demand environment will be available for 3 months starting on Monday. So have a great day, everyone, and please be sure to stick around to attend the rest of today's sessions. Thank you.